Hi, this is Joe Castellano. Welcome inside China Basin, your San Francisco Giants three times a week podcast brought to you by TPC Harding Park, the only public golf course in San Francisco offering golfers the opportunity to play where the pros play. Today's guest is San Francisco Chronicle columnist John Shea. But before we talk to John, I want to tell you about my favorite golf course, TPC Harding Park in San Francisco. As I was thumbing through Golf Digest, I found that TPC Harding Park is recognized as one of the best places to play in America. And that didn't surprise me too much because I love the majestic layout and beautiful amenities. My San Francisco resident card gives me a great rate at TPC Harding Park, and I get to play where PGA Tour icons Jack Nicklaus, Phil Mickelson, and Tiger Woods have played. Now, if I can only score like them, okay, I'll stop dreaming and get to our guest. And we have a great week for you here on Inside China Basin. Leading off the week is John Shea from the San Francisco Chronicle, our regular guest. And, he's just as good a leadoff hitter as Nori Aoki, probably better. And then batting second, almost as good as Joe Panic, we're going to have John Lazor, the play-by-play announcer for the Richmond Flying Squirrels. That'll be on Thursday to talk about the Matt Cain outing. That's tonight. And then Friday we'll be at the ballpark at AT&T Park as the Giants are back home taking on the Arizona Diamondbacks. So a big week here on the sportsvirus.com. We start with John, and why don't we start with Matt Cain and his rehab, which is going to happen in Richmond on Tuesday night. And you've got Jake Peavy also on the way. I don't know which one is ahead of the other because Peavy's got the back issue. He might be a little bit ahead because he's been pitching in AAA, but who knows how tricky that is and where Cain stands. And what do you do if your manager, Bruce Bochy, when those guys are ready, what are you going to do with the rotation?
Yeah, well, you're talking about your lineup. I want to find out who the next 3 or 4 and 5 guys are. Don't tease us with the first two batters. I want to see who the big guys are, the big boys.
Right. Buster Posey, and we'll talk about him later,
yeah,
by the way.
That's not a bad lineup. Now, the Giants have that age-old problem, right? Too many pitchers. Well, if they were the best overall team in baseball, it would be a real problem, but it's not as if they have the best rotation going. So, yeah, they have two guys coming back. They have Jake Peavy a little bit further ahead than Matt Cain. And you have both of them coming off pretty severe injuries. Obviously, Cain had the surgery with the elbow, and Peavy had the hip and the back. And at his age and the number of innings and pitches he's had over his career, that's a big concern. He had a little bit of a setback a couple weeks ago. But now he's up to 69 pitches. He's with AAA. He's doing everything he needs to do. Another start is going to be scheduled this week here. Cain is maybe a few starts behind him. And yeah, what do you do? Well, the main thing is you look at the rotation coming in, and Ryan Vogelsong was going to be the sixth guy all along. So I think that's an easy decision.
Sure.
You maintain him. You keep him on the roster. If somebody goes down, you always have him available. He's been good. He's had a couple of rough ones, but he's a very good number five starter, and certainly a number five starter who could be ready as the number six guy, especially because, listen, you've got Peavy who's younger and who's got the bigger contract, and he was pretty much there at the end last season, so you got to give it to him. He's earned it. And Cain, obviously, nothing to say about that. And when Cain comes back, maybe it's more of a Heston situation because he is the rookie. He's the guy with the least amount of service time. It's not like it's September. I mean, Bochy has time to sit back and make the conservative decisions, and those are about as conservative as you can get when Peavy and Cain come back to remove Vogelsong and Heston.
Yeah, and Heston has options, right? So they could send him down, which it was really unthinkable for a little while there, the way he was pitching. I mean, remember that outing that he had in Houston. But, I don't know. Some people are saying, well, it's Madison Bumgarner and then a bunch of five starters. I don't know if I agree with that, but there has been a lot of inconsistency after Bumgarner, and even Bumgarner hasn't really been himself, being totally dominating so far. So your thoughts on the rest of the rotation and how they need to step it up maybe?
So you're saying Bumgarner is to the Giants rotation as LeBron is to the Cavaliers. It's basically LeBron and four guys from the Y.
Right. Where's Dellavedova? They need Dellavedova, I guess.
And again, you're not going to give up on a guy making $17 million, Tim Lincecum, with two Cy Young awards, Tim Lincecum, who had a 2 ERA not long ago. So it's pretty obvious they're going to stick with him. The two guys coming back, Bumgarner and Tim Hudson. You know, unless Tim Hudson pitches himself out of the rotation with an injury or the fact that he's 40 and just totally ineffective and lost it and is knocked out in the second inning every game, you're not going to see any just crazy move here where they're going to release anybody or send a guy who's never relieved into the bullpen we've heard from Bochy how many times with Kane and Peavy how slow play they're doing this, and slow play is the new Bochy term of the millennium here. Slow play this guy, slow play that guy. Meaning he can. I mean, you look at look across the bay. Ben Zobrist was only had a couple of games of rehab, and a couple of relievers. Sean Doolittle. I mean, his rehab seemed to be pretty quick. The Giants are very conservative on this front, and always seem to take longer than need be, whether it's an extra week, an extra day, an extra start, or an extra game with more at-bats. And for a team with older pitchers, maybe that's not a bad way to go.
We'll have more with San Francisco Chronicle columnist John Shea right after this. Giants fans are settling for nothing but the best these days, so if you're in the market for buying or selling real estate in San Francisco, you'll want the A-1 real estate agent. Well, at McGuire Real Estate, the top producer is Robert Merriman, and I encourage you to give him a call at 415-351-4698 or check him out at robertmerriman.com. Robert Merriman is opening doors for buyers and sellers in the city, and his excellent service is never discounted. Whether you're a buyer or seller in San Francisco, you need a creative negotiator on your team. Robert Merriman at McGuire Real Estate is the man for the job. Contact Robert at 415-351-4698. That's 415-351-4698. Or robertmerriman.com. Right now, to be one game behind the Dodgers, as they said, after having Pence out for as long as he was out, I mean, that's still pretty good. You got to look at that. I'm just wondering about the overall lineup. It seems like they just hit so much better on the road, and they need to because their pitchers haven't been that great on the road. And I guess it's the ballparks, but the Giants just they hit all these home runs on the road, and I don't know if that carries over when they come home all the time, that they have the confidence, but are they letting the ballpark get in their head a little bit?
Well, I don't think it's about that. I just think that they just tee off on the road because the circumstances and the environment and the climate allow for it. I covered the games in Cincinnati when they scored 30 runs in the last three games of the four-game series, and it was just everything they hit was just on the barrel and hit hard, and they're just collecting runs and hits like, The Dusty Baker's first team of 93 went into an expansion Colorado and just seemed to score 15 runs a game. And Kurt Manwaring was leading the way with four hits. And it just seemed like everybody up and down was just, aiming for the fences. And that's obviously where Belt started going off. And Crawford showed a lot of power with triples and home runs. And they hit more home runs there than, you've seen in a long time out of this team. But then they went home to San Francisco, and it was 2-1 again. And they knew that. I went around the room asking them. I said, well, this is all nice and everything, but now you're going home. And they realized that they were all saying, company line, it's not in our head when we're at home. It's just that the dimensions and the climate and the cold and the wind – and the fact that there's a huge gap in right center field, I mean, it's more about taking advantage of that and hitting line drives and moving the guy over than it is the three-run homer. So I think that's just the way it is. I mean, for the Padres for years in San Diego, it was the same thing. They started off pretty hot this year, putting all those numbers to bed about how it's a pitcher's park and not a hitter's park, but it's the same old story in San Francisco. It's certainly a pitcher's stadium, and that's pretty much what the Giants have built this team around is pitching. And you could say all you want about Posey and Pence and how good they are, but you look at all the splits, and everybody's a much better hitter. It's a Coors Field, the opposite of Coors Field, basically. You don't hit on the road, but you hit at home. That's what they do with the Rockies.
Speaking of Posey, let's talk about him, because he doesn't have Sandoval protecting him in the lineup anymore, but I think this lineup actually has improved. I mean, you've got Aoki at the top, who's doing a really good job. Crawford is a better hitter these days. Panic is really showing what he can do. So there's good support around him, and you know, he really hasn't caught fire yet, Posey. And I wonder if it's opposing pitchers now figuring him out a little bit. I mean, he's trying to make adjustments as well. That's always going to happen. Let's hear this soundbite from Gerrit Cole, who's one of the best pitchers in baseball right now, and he pitched really well against the Giants at AT&T Park. Here's what he said about facing Buster Posey.
You know, but we stayed aggressive to Posey, and you know, we weren't going to give in. I mean, he said. I mean, he's freaking Buster Posey. So, you know, you gotta paint on the corners. You gotta throw fastballs inside, and you gotta execute breaking balls.
So, if you have a guy like that who's having a great season, like Gerrit Cole, and he's saying Buster freaking Posey, that tells you about the respect that he has for him. And it sounds like he doesn't want to throw anything over the middle of the plate. So that means that Posey's not getting those, you know, those fastballs right down the middle. What have you noticed about just the reputation that he has against, you know, any pitcher, whether it's one of the best in the game or just, you know, your average starter when he has to face Posey?
Well, I think Buster freaking Posey has a different definition than Bucky freaking Dent, right?
Right.
Yeah, this is a good thing.
You just came from there, by the way, so that's why that's on your mind, Boston, right?
But hey, he's their Bonds. He's their Mays. He's the guy that in meetings before the game, the coaches say, don't let this guy beat you. And we all know Posey. I mean, you give him something out in the middle of the plate, he's just going to rip it. You give him something away, he's going to go on down the right field line. Unlike a lot of today's hitters, he uses the whole field. And I remember talking to Will Clark about him, and Will just loves the guy, you know, as does Willie Mays and a lot of former Giants. They just love the way he hits. They love the approach. They love that he doesn't always try to hit home runs, and that it, you know, a double in the gap, a single down the line. And Clark uses, you know, I went up to Clark and I asked him. I said, you know, he seems, you know, this is kind of during a funk. He seems to pop the ball up a lot, and you know, a lot of those balls actually, you know, fall for hits. And I was asking him about maybe not great contact, and he said, you know, if you can pop up a ball for a hit, that means you're a pretty darn good hitter. And then I thought back, and Will used to do that a lot. He used to, you know, hit as hard as he can, but a little pop-up would fall through. That means you're strong enough to get it past the infield.
Sure.
And even on a mistake, that's how you collect hits. And, you know, pitchers might try to bust him in and make him jam it a little, roll it over to the pitcher or third baseman. But he likes to extend his arms and get out front and use the whole field, and that's what pitchers try to, you know, prevent him from doing. But you're right. This is a lineup that is a lot different. And if you look at the daily lineup that Bochy throws out there, you see all these guys hitting 290 plus.
Right.
And that's pretty remarkable from 1 to 8. And especially in this time, a pitcher's time. You know, it's an arrow that favors the pitcher, and this is not the early 2000s when everybody was juiced up and hitting 320 with you know, 20, 30 bombs at the All-Star break. This is a time where there's testing, you know, greenies are not allowed.
Right.
You know, with amphetamines allowed players to come back quicker. And so, you know, in the hot weather and the long games, you know, you just wear it. And this lineup seems to be more balanced. And I had my doubts coming in without Sandoval, without Morse, and without Pence, who started on the DL. And I said, well, who's going to protect Posey? But as it turns out, you know, maybe he doesn't need protection as much when everybody is hitting 290.
More with John Shea after this. Today's interview is being sponsored by Toscalito Tire and Automotive. You have to admit, collecting World Series titles is a new trend for the Giants, but at Toscalito Tire and Automotive, they've been winning since 1971 with quality tires and reliable auto and light truck repair at 6 Bay Area locations near you. Toscalito Tire and Automotive will take care of you like family, and they offer a nationwide guarantee backed by the strength of the Goodyear Tire and Service Network. And unlike watching close Giants games, Going to Toscalito equals a stress-free life. No torture at Toscalito Tire and Automotive with four Marin locations, plus the Marina in San Francisco and Vallejo. Toscalito, more than just a tire store. I am pretty startled to see some of the numbers against left-handed pitchers for the left-handed batters. I mean, that's not something you normally see, and that's why managers make, you know, different lineup cards out, or they make moves late in the game. But when you look at Joe Panik hitting around 340 against lefties, Nori Aoki hitting same thing around 340, and Crawford at last check was at 439 against lefties, that makes it, you know, much easier, I guess, for Bochy. And you just, you know, wonder what kind of moves does he really have to make. I mean, you want those guys in there when they're hitting that well against lefties.
Obviously, yeah. I was covering the A's for a few days. I was in Detroit and I was in Boston. And in Detroit, everybody's a right-handed hitter. And, you know, the A's just tore them up because they have these right-handed starting pitchers who are very effective, even against their big bats. You know, Detroit, it doesn't matter. They'll just throw their best hitters out there and they just all happen to be right-handed. So you know, they'd eat up on the lefties, but these particular games, the A's just killed them with their right-handed starters. And, I just think that when it comes late into a game, no matter what these guys are hitting, and it happens to Crawford all the time, well, let's bring in the lefty. What does Crawford do? He hits a single up the middle. And, you know, I haven't seen a manager who will reverse it against Crawford because he hits lefties better. Because it was just, you know, a year or two ago where he just couldn't hit lefties at all. And he's made, you know, great improvement in that area, and now he just tees off on lefties. But still, every manager has a big enough ego and hears in his ear what the matchups are overall, lefties versus lefties, righties versus righties. I trust my guy. I'm going to send my lefty in against Crawford. I don't care that he's hitting, for now, better against lefties. And I'm sure it's the same with Panik and everybody else who has better numbers right now against lefties.
Well, it is a smaller sample size. You can say that if you're a manager. You can look at that. But you know it would be fun to think about. And you were just at Fenway Park, and you're watching the Oakland A's against the Boston Red Sox. And Pat Vendetti makes his Major League debut. This is a major story here for Major League Baseball. You know, it's a big deal that we now have a pitcher who can throw right-handed and left-handed. I like where you put SHP for his listing, a switch-handed pitcher. So what do you do if you're Vendetti? Let's say, you know, later on this year when the Giants are facing the A's and you got these lefties coming up who hit so well against lefties, maybe he just throws right-handed in that situation. I don't know.
But it's funny you ask. The other day somebody asked Bob Melvin, the A's manager, who managed Ichiro, but who has, you know, very good numbers against lefties and right.
Right, right.
What do you do? And he said, "Oh, I haven't thought about that yet. Give me a chance." But I guarantee you, he'll turn him around. He'll make him throw lefty against Ichiro because, listen, this guy doesn't throw anything close to 90 miles an hour. It's all about deception and fastball command and trickery. And from the left side, which isn't his natural side, he was born a right-hander. His dad made him a switch thrower from age 3, got him a glove from Mizuno at age 5, and it's got two thumbs, so he can throw from either side. And by the way, he's a switch hitter.
And of course.
Yeah. So it's an amazing story, and it's fun to watch. And while I was in Boston, I spoke with Pablo Sandoval about him.
I saw that.
Yeah, and he, you know, the famous story of him being born a left-handed thrower. And to this day, I see him sometimes playing catch, just messing around with the glove on his right hand and just playing catch with his left. A lot of guys would try it, but he's the only guy who looks normal doing it. And that's because he was born a left-hander. And as the story went, his brother got him and said, "Listen, if you want to catch, if you want to play the infield, you got to throw right-handed." Pablo corrected me. He said, "That's not the story at all. It was me. I was 9. I wanted to play shortstop." And I figured the only way I can play shortstop, because they won't let me play shortstop because I'm left-handed, is to start throwing right-handed. And that's as simple as that. He started throwing the ball right-handed, got enough control, coordination, technique to finally get in games as a right-handed infielder. Well, the Giants drafted him, as if you remember, he caught in the minor leagues for the Giants. So he had a pretty good arm. And all those years in a Giants uniform, nobody ever complained about his arm. He had a great arm.
Yeah.
Right? And a quick arm, and just always seemed to be right there. And so all these years later, he finally sees somebody, and there's nobody more interested in Vendetti than that night, last Friday, than Pablo Sandoval, because he said, man, this guy just reminds me of my childhood. And here he is in the majors, throwing lefty and throwing righty, depending on who the Red Sox are sending up there. And so I asked him about it, and he was just amazed. He was just so intrigued by it, and it's just a great thing. So I asked him, I said, well, you know, could this open the door for more, you know, switch throwers? He said, absolutely. I said, well, what about a switch position player, a guy who could you know, play shortstop and right-handed, and then maybe the next inning he'll need to play first base left-handed, you know, because, you know, first baseman, they can make the throw to third, they can make the throw to second a little easier, you know, they can go to their right better. And he said no, that's not going to happen. That just takes too much work. You know, as a pitcher, you throw every day and that's all you do, but a hitter, you got to hit, and there's not enough hours in a day to spend working on your throwing from both sides. So it was a great story, and it was fun to talk to Pablo about it. And Pablo actually said, you know, I saw him throw left-handed, and guess what? I can throw harder left-handed than that guy can.
Yeah, he doesn't throw hard. But, you know, I guess it's hard enough to switch hit, let alone switch throw. But, you know, Pablo has actually given up the right-handed side. He was really struggling. So now he's a left-handed batter. So he doesn't factor into my question here. You got to refresh my memory. If you are a switch hitter, do you declare first and then Vendetti gets to pick which way he wants to go? How does that work?
Well, Vendetti's first year in pro ball was Staten Island, the Yankees rookie league team.
Right.
First game, first inning. There it is, a switch hitter. You know, he puts on his glove. He's going to throw lefty. Well, the batter turns around. Now he's going to hit righty. Then Vendetti switches the glove. He's going to throw righty. Well, then the batter moved across the plate. Now he's going to. And it went back and forth, and it was about a 20-minute delay. The umpires didn't know what to do. The managers didn't know. Everybody's laughing in both dugouts. Vendetti's taking it seriously, right? I mean, he did this in high school. He did it in his college. It's his profession. So the next day, baseball officials in the minors and majors got together and said, we need a rule. It's now called the Pat Vendetti rule. And what you have to do, it's got nothing to do with the switch hitter. It's got everything to do with the switch thrower. He, the pitcher, has to declare before the batter gets up there which side he is going to throw from. So it's a disadvantage for Vendetti. He's got to say, well, I'm going to throw righty because this guy is worse left-handed hitter than right-handed hitter. Or I'm going to throw lefty because this guy's, you know, worse from the other side. So it gets tricky against, you know, it's an advantage against every batter except for a switch hitter. So when a switch hitter comes there, he can always hit opposite. He can hit righty if Vendetti's going left.
Huh. Well, this is not a novelty. You know, it's fun to see because, you know, you want to see maybe more knuckleballers. It's great to see this because we've only seen it one other time, and that was Greg Harris, but that was at the end of the year. Felipe Alou was the manager in Montreal. That was a long time ago, though.
Yeah, before he joined the Giants and became the Giants manager, replacing Dusty Baker. He was in Montreal, remember, all those years, had a couple of really good teams. Well, on one of the teams that wasn't so good, late in the year, Greg Harris, who was at the end of the line, you know, he played 14, 15, 16 years. He had a long career, but he always wanted the switch throw. He always practiced it. And managers never let him because, are you kidding me? Come on. You just throw from one side. Said, okay. He went from team to team. So finally, you know, who else but Felipe Alou gave him the chance? It was late in the season, late September, and, you know, he got through an inning, and he did fine. He threw righty, he threw lefty against the Reds, and he was effective. That is the only inning any switch thrower has thrown in a game since the 1800s until
wow.
now.
Huh. Wow. And I like that they have a rule named after Vendetti. At least he will embrace it, unlike Buster Posey, who I don't think wants to embrace the quote-unquote Buster Posey home plate rule, which, by the way, I never say that until now. I will not say that anywhere near his presence because I don't think he likes it too much.
Oh, he hates it. He doesn't want to be affiliated with that at all. But guess what? The World Series almost ended with a what if they sent the runner, you know, with the Giants misplaying that ball out in left field, Perez and Blanco, and they were slow getting the ball in. What if they send him and it's a poor throw and the catcher comes over You know, is he in the way of the runner? Is there a collision? Let's go to replay. How would you like to end a World Series on the Buster Posey rule involving Buster Posey?
I'm glad that didn't happen. By the way, one other situation occurred while you were at Fenway Park, which was really scary. It was a foul ball, a bat actually that cracked, and the barrel of the bat goes flying. Brett Laurie, his bat was the maple bat, and it was a very dangerous situation for Tanya Carpenter, the fan at Fenway Park, who originally was in critical condition, but I understand now she's in fair condition. But isn't this a lesson for Major League Baseball, kind of a scare that we just got about fan safety, and maybe there should be more netting in the NHL? A fan got killed by a hockey puck. They put up netting behind the goals. I was in San Jose at the San Jose Giants game, and I noticed they have netting on the first base, third base side. It seems safer. I don't know about these major league parks. You want to be able to have great seats, but what about safety?
I don't think they're addressing it nearly as much as they need to. The owners forever have had something called the baseball rule going back 100 years, which basically allows them not to be sued if anybody is hurt with a ball or a bat flying into the crowd. It even says on the ticket stubs, you take your own risk if a ball comes and hurts you.
Right.
Well, come on. That was written a long time ago, and that's kind of antiquated. The game is much faster paced. We're using maple bats instead of ash, which break in half. Ash, they would crack. These things just snap in half and fly like a helicopter. And nothing is more dangerous than sitting in the front row at Fenway. AT&T, the same thing. You're pretty darn close.
Yeah.
You know, Oakland, you're a little further back. But in some of these parks, it's just downright dangerous to be sitting. And don't give me that line about, well, you got to pay attention. Because this woman was sitting in the second row, and Brett Laurie hit the ball. Well, you're taught to follow the ball. She follows the ball and is hit by the bat.
Ugh.
You don't have time to react.
No.
You can't blame her for not watching. I'm sure she was somewhat protective of her 8-year-old who was next to her.
Right.
But you're following the ball and then a bat comes at you? I mean, how do you prepare for that? Now, owners, they got to do something. You know, we haven't heard anything from the Red Sox except for a little statement. You know, our prayers are with her and hope she has a speedy recovery. Okay, fine. You know, Brett Laurie sent some flowers and a card, you know, fine. But MLB, through the Players Association, has to move now. I mean, they got to put netting up, and they got to do it now. Why wait? Why wait till the next bargaining session with the Players Association? Why wait till somebody else is hurt, maybe more severely? John Henry, the Red Sox owner, why haven't we heard from you? A's owner, you know, why haven't we heard from you? Fisher, he never speaks anyway, so... But I just think, I mean, the Giants should do something right now as well. I mean, I wouldn't feel comfortable with my child in the front row unless it's right behind the plate where there's a backstop, where there's
right.
netting, where there's all kinds of stuff. But that area between the dugouts and the home plate backstop or fencing or screening or netting, I mean, that's a real danger zone. Say you're near the Giants dugout and a lefty is up and the guy, you know, checks his swing. All of a sudden, a missile is coming right at you.
Yeah.
What do you do?
You can't even move.
and you can't sue anybody because that's the way it's been in baseball for 100 years. So I think it's time to change. I think it's time to protect the fans. Listen, they protect the players when someone has a concussion or a near concussion. You're out of the game. They give base coaches helmets now. Why aren't we protecting fans a little more? I mean, fans might say, well, I like the intimacy. I'd like to give high five to Buster when he comes. Well, you can't do that anyway, but you can have a conversation. Well, you can do that through the netting.
Yeah.
It's still intimate, and if you don't want to spend $500, don't sit there. Someone else will.
I thought it was a real wake-up call, and I totally agree with you. And I even think pitchers need to be wearing maybe a more of a streamlined helmet. They came out with that big one, but you know, we'll see what happens. As we finish up, let's talk about the draft. The first three picks in the draft were shortstops. Dansby Swanson, the number one pick for the Arizona Diamondbacks out of Vanderbilt. What about what the Giants did with Phil Bickford, the right-handed pitcher who throws really hard, and he did really well in the Cape Cod League, I understand. Same thing with their second pick, which they got as compensation, by the way, for Pablo Sandoval, Chris Shaw from Boston College, who has the most power, supposedly, of anybody in the draft, and he also swung the bat well in the Cape Cod League, so I guess the Giants are taking a lot of stock in the Cape Cod League.
Yeah, which is a wooden bat league, and you know, compared to college or high school where they use metal bats, gives you a better indication of how good these guys are. And you know, these guys who are drafted in the first round, they all have cartoon numbers. They all have a lot more strikeouts than innings, and they have ungodly on-base percentages. And obviously, they don't translate to the major leagues quite yet. But what you get out of the two guys the Giants drafted were power. It's a power arm and a power bat. You know, Bickford throws hard, and you know, Shaw hits the ball hard.
Yeah.
And you know, that's what they're looking for. And you know, it's curious. Yeah, a lot of shortstops, 8 in the first round. And they said that, you know, the first time, it's only happened a couple times, and the first time there were 8 shortstops in the first round was back in 1971. So I actually looked it up. I said, well, where are these guys now? I said, well, because you drafted 8 shortstops in the first round this year, you know, and we won't know for several years how good these guys are, if any of them are any good. Because if you go to the 71 draft, 8 shortstops, and I'm sure you know these names.
By the way, let me. I'm gonna try to take a guess at. Like Davey Concepcion.
Oh,
no,
you wish.
No.
Tommy Bianco, 3rd overall to the Padres, right?
Okay.
Kendrick Holloway, 4th overall to the Expos.
Who are these guys?
Taylor Duncan, 10th to the Braves. Neil Rasmussen to the Astros. Dale Soderholm to the Twins. Mike Miley to the Reds. The only guy I saw there was Craig Reynolds, who went 22nd, and you know, he made a nice career. Another guy, Tom Verizer, he played with Detroit and Cleveland.
Okay, yeah, I remember
yeah,
him.
So those
yeah.
two guys. Okay, you recognize them. But the first 6 guys, I think they had a combined, you know, 100 games among them, and maybe half of those they actually played the position of shortstop. So I mean, that's why this baseball draft is just a big who knows, because you, in the NBA and the NFL, you have a high pick, you're pretty much putting him in the lineup right away, and he's going to produce for you. But these guys, you're picking them out of high school, you're picking them out of college, and it's a 3-year plan, it's a 5-year plan, even if it's a 1 or 2 year plan, you just never know. A guy could blow out his arm, or he just could not adjust to professional ball with the wooden bats, or just the long seasons, the grind. I mean, there are all kinds of physical and mental reasons why these guys don't produce. And a lot of it is, well, the scouts didn't know. You know, they just weren't that good. And, you know, that's, you could go to any draft and come up with a whole lot of nobodies in the first round in baseball.
I thought you were going to say Robin Yount or Rick Burleson or Bert Campanaris. Or I don't know, I'm just thinking of these names off the top of my head. I love the 70s names, you know, but those names didn't come to mind.
Kendrick Holloway. Never played the big league.
It's inexact.
3rd overall.
It's a good example of how inexact of a science it is. Well, John, thanks a lot. Really appreciate it. Thanks for leading off the week, which is going to be a great week, as we talked about. And I'll see you at the ballpark, hopefully, later on this week.
And again, I can't wait for your 3, 4, 5 hitters.
Next week, they will be lumbering to the microphone. They're so strong and powerful.
To be determined.
To be determined. Thanks, John.
Thanks, Joe.
That's San Francisco Chronicle columnist John Shea, who joins us regularly here on thesportsvirus.com. Come back again on Thursday. We'll catch up with John Lazor, play-by-play announcer with the Richmond Flying Squirrels, the Giants' AA affiliate in the Eastern League. And we'll talk about Matt Cain on a Major League rehab assignment and pitching on Tuesday night. For now, I'm Joe Castellano. Thanks for listening to Inside China Basin.